Connected live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Very good evening to you. It's 2 minutes after 8 o'clock. This is Point of View. My name is Phemelo Modena. Of course, we're going to be touching on that story, that developing story in Stilfontein. We've been looking at it for some time now. I'm going to be speaking to AMCU's president, Joseph Matunja, in a second. And I'm also going to be speaking to the National Association of Artisanal Miners. You remember, we had a conversation with them maybe about a year ago. And lots has happened since. And of course, we're here now and I want to hear their take. We will speak to the Joburg Public Safety MMC. They did a raid on Bramfontein today. And the target was liquor stores and the like. So we'll get an update on that. And then the DA went to march today. They marched and they submitted about 200,000 signatures. They went to NERSA. Implying and hoping and asking NERSA to please reconsider the new tariff hikes, Eskom's tariff hikes. We're likely to see 40% tariff hikes, and it is time actually for all of us to start, adding our voices to this. They are looking at this public participation time. NERSA is busy conducting that at the moment. So the DA decided 200,000 signatures is going to get them some sort of a hearing. So we'll talk to them in a short while. And then Leroy Mark will be here. We'll talk about what to watch. And our musical doctor is also going to be here. We're looking at the summers, which took place last week.
Point of View.
You know, we've been watching the story for some time now. A lot is still happening in Stilfontein. Our reporter, Bizolo Mulumane, was there for the past 2 days. And we were watching and spoke yesterday to a couple of people. And unfortunately, you know, it doesn't sound good at all. We also heard remarks by the minister in the presidency and lots of reaction coming through from there. But we also wanted to hear what AMCU had to say. The president of AMCU, Joseph Matunja. Thank you so much, Bob Matunja, for making time for us. What's your assessment of what's happening in Stilfontein?
Hi, good evening, and thank you for the opportunity, and good evening to your listeners.
Good evening.
Yes, thank you again. I think the situation that is faced by we as the citizen of South Africa is very dire and very serious. The issue of immigration is quite very serious in South Africa. Mm. We've got porous borders that are not properly maintained. We don't even know who is in the country, who is coming in to do what, and where are they living. That's one thing. Secondly, the issue of what they call it illegal mining, it shouldn't be squarely be on those that you see who are still in underground called Zama-Zama or illegal miners. The blame should be put right at the doorstep of these multi-international companies that they are failing to comply with all regulation that inform them how to conduct or how to decommission the mine, which we call it a mine closure. The government is very lenient to this multi-international. If they were complying with the act, MPRDA and other acts that are associated to mine closure, surely the ground wouldn't be fatal as it is. So the government itself, because of being lenient to this multinational company, they created the environment for this so-called illegal miner. Thirdly, the rate of unemployment in this country, others they will say is a ticking time bomb, is over 32.9%. I mean, with no clue or any hope that it will ever decrease. Fourthly, retrenchment, mothballing, putting the mind on care maintenance because of multinational companies not making billions. It also triggers, because if Joseph Matunja is a mine worker for 34 years, I'm retrenched. The only skill I have is to operate that machine. I'm a drill operator, RDO, and other skill that I've learned for the past 40 years. There is no other work that I know. So if there are people who are doing illegal recruitment or illegal mining, they will recruit me. And I've got 5 children. Mm. I've got life to live. What I'm supposed to do? That's the only skill that I have. So I will end up going to the very same system. In short, is the government failing to take to task these multinational companies?
Mr. Matunjo, I'm no mining expert, but I do remember a few years ago where there was a lot of talk about the mining industry, particularly in this country, being a sunset industry. And that came about because, you know, other places like Australia were mechanizing a lot more. And it was becoming, the industry was saying it was becoming more expensive. And the gold price, for instance, was not as high as it is today. There was a lot of talk about retraining and reskilling mine workers so that there will not be job losses to the scale that we are seeing right now. Whatever happened to those programs?
I think all these things are just PR exercises, and it's still going to be worse with this unjust transition that we are experiencing, where the mines are closing, in particular coal mines, anthracite coal, because of this hoax called CO2 emission. And all those skills that we are talking about for the upskilling, nothing has happened. Hmm. They still continue because this multinational, they find it very easy in South Africa to do as they want. As I've stated earlier on that, if they mine, they will mine for a certain period and then mothball the mine, not close it, just pack it, and go to maybe Africa, West Africa, like Anglo Gold Ashanti, exploit the minerals up in West Africa, and coming back in South Africa and opening it. In 2018, we had a Section 77 under NEDLAC. We marched to all provinces, telling the government, handing over the memorandum to say, one, there shouldn't be any mine that is put on cane maintenance. Let the government revoke those licenses, because they steal minerals. Minerals belongs to the people, to the nation. Government is the custodian. So we cannot be held up by multinational companies. And then also to come with a quota system of 60-40 exports. 60% of the mineral can be exported. 40 remained in the country to encourage local industrialization and local beneficiation. All those things hasn't happened. And then, thirdly, we call for a curriculum that the education system that we have in South Africa does not have any relation with the minerals that we mine. Hence, we've got so many graduates that cannot contribute anything in the economy locally and globally. All those things fell into the deaf ear because the mining from day immemorial, the mining houses are the one running the government.
You know, Mr. Matunjo, people speak today about, and you spoke a little bit also about immigration, but people speak today of an influx of foreigners being the ones who are underground. But the truth of the matter is that the mining industry has actually, because it is exploitative, has actually been the one that brought in a lot of the particularly in South Africa, the SADC region workers. And maybe let's talk a little bit about that.
For us as AMCO, we don't have any issue about our brothers, sisters from neighboring states. I mean, we've been working with them. Yes, I mean, they were the backbone of the mining industry for years that we know.
Yeah.
I mean, some of our families married to them. We're becoming a big family. The issue is the lawlessness, and that is caused by our government. They are sleeping on duty. Hence, I was talking about porous borders. And also, when I come to South Africa as a migrant labor, what happened after being retrained? There is no monitoring system. Whether Joseph Matunjo, does he report back to Malawi? Does he go out of the country? I can just open and erect any informal settlement around. There is no accountability. And all this fatal ground is created by this incompetent government. You cannot blame squarely for those people who are coming in the country.
Yeah.
It's because all the systems of the government has failed. We are in the failed state, in short.
We're here now. And mines have been abandoned. No one's been held accountable for not even rehabilitating the land, not even decommissioning it properly. People just up and leave. And we're going to speak to artisanal miners now to tell us what's happening underground. But the point is that it's not one mine. We're focusing on this mine here. It's everywhere. What's your thought on what has to happen going forward?
I mean, every minister in this country is not accountable. I mean, if the head of the state, the president of the country, is sleeping on duty, what can happen? The worst thing that is going to happen, can you imagine all South Africans who has an experience in mining, who are operating, can also join this caravan of illegal mining? It will create a conflict that no one will stop it. That is why it's going to go. Because mostly the majority are people from the neighboring state. Yes, with some of the South Africans. But can you imagine if all the South Africans who are very experienced in mining, they will say, fine, this is a very lucrative business, employment, these people are getting a lot of money. What we can do, we can also claim this abandoned mining shaft. Then what is going to happen? There are going to be groups. There's going to be a conflict, then there will be something that the government cannot. The government, Mr. Ramaphosa, our president, must take a stand in terms of immigration, in terms of these companies that they abandoned these mines, to take full responsibility. Look at now at Stilfontein. The police, it's not their duty to go and be the manchingelanas or the security of the old shaft. They're supposed to be looking after your safety and my safety and the community safety, not what they are doing right now. So all this money that is spent, which is coming from us, your pay as we earn and my pay as we earn, they must take it back from this multinational company. They must tell this Anglo today, this Sibanye Stillwater, this Harmony, all this multinational company, if we've got a president, he can tell them. But if he's compromised, he cannot tell them. This is a self-inflicted problem. What happened to those young girls that were raped? Somewhere in West Rand. What happened to that case? Nothing. If you tamper with the minerals, you are tampering with the sovereignty of the country. So where on earth would you see this thing happening? It's only in South Africa.
Mr. Matunja, I mean, just maybe give us a sense, because nobody really wants to come out with that information. Who ran this mine? What do you know about who ran this mine before it was abandoned?
I think it was DRD. DRD. I just forget the full name.
Okay.
But they can trace it down.
Yes.
I mean, we've still got Chamber of Mine. They call themselves Mineral Council. They know these mines. Let's talk about Sibanye, Stillwater. They've got cooks. They just left those mines. They just mothballed those mines. They just, put on care maintenance. And also, around Sibanye mines, this called Zamazama is rife, because people are hungry. People, they want jobs. People, they've got skills. But one man can decide to close the mine and mothball it, put on care maintenance, and wait for the right time for the gold to appreciate the price. This is what is happening. It's up to the government. If the government does not take a decisive action to be accountable, to make these companies accountable, we're still going to see a lot of problems in this country. If these mines are closing, like your Siriti coal mine are closing, most people will be unemployed, sitting at home with skills. They will try to use those skills in order to bring life or livelihood or food on the table for their families.
What's your sense of how this particular story is going to end, Mr. Matunja?
It's not difficult. It can be end by the state. I mean, the state, they do have power, not this kind of arrogant populist grandstanding of the presidency, the minister in the president. He just reminded to me to say, in Marikana in 2012, 16 August, workers were called criminals. Today they can't distinguish between criminals and workers. I find it very strange. They have to have a decisive position. They've got legislation. You go to Anglo, Anglo, you want to own this mine. Anglo Gold Ashanti, you own this mine. Make sure that you close this mine properly. Migration, borders, porous borders, amend properly. We need to know who is in the country, what is it doing, where does it stay. All those kind of things. It's a multi, approach. It cannot just be approached, by only mining per se, by closing the mine. Who is in the country? What is it doing?
I really appreciate your take this evening, AMCU President Joseph Matunja. I've got Anonymous who's calling us, who says they work at a mine.
How
Anonymous,
are you?
I'm good. Thank you for calling.
I'm very good. Listen, I actually speak from experience. I actually work in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I can tell you is that all the people that are unemployed, mm-hmm. and most of the people that are actually called Zamazamas are actually experienced and qualified people.
Mm.
It's a big cabal and it's a big syndicate.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when the when these big companies shut down, inverted commas, the government can take those mines, have a good mix between graduates with no experience and the ones that actually are experienced in the industry, then take over these mines and then let them be owned by the government itself. Then we'll actually create some sort of revenue directly by the government into the state. Then we can actually have some sort of income coming in. Because at the end of the day, if Zama can make profit, then it means the commodities are still there. In fact, the commodities are all still there.
Yep.
The reason why these companies are shutting down is because at some point
it's not enough.
It drops below the cutoff,
yeah.
Then it's no longer making as much profit as they were making.
That's what Mr. Matunja was saying, that if it's not making you billions, it's not worth it, but there is still something in the ground.
100%. And if you cut out the middlemen and you as a government, you run this thing on your own, the DMR needs to be running these shutting down mines, then creating revenue for the country. That's another stream of revenue the country should be making from all these shutting down mines. We already have the resources there in terms of the infrastructure, in terms of the construction, all those things.
So you're saying you're in the industry. What's your sense of why what makes sense to everybody is not being done?
What is not being done is a lot of truth is not being told. Simple as that. There's a lot of exploitation, everyone knows that. There's a lot of what needs to be taken out and is not taken out. There's a lot of cutting corners that happens because of these companies. I remember a while back I used to work for, I think I can mention their names because they're no longer even operating in the country. I used to work for a company called First Uranium. They actually bought a shaft because of its uranium and gold. But their main focus was the gold, was the uranium. And when the shutting down of Kuberg for the nuclear power plant, when that came about, then they decided they're going to leave. But the shaft is still there, and it still has uranium, still has gold, but no one actually uses it.
Again, I'm asking, why do you think what makes sense to everybody is not being done by the government? Everybody seems to understand where the problem is. Why do you think it's not happening?
Because the government is detached from the people. I mean, the minister, when was the last time he was actually in touch with an actual mine? Probably more than 30 years ago. So they are detached in terms of what is happening on the ground on an everyday basis.
Anonymous, I really appreciate your take on this one. Thank you so much for that. Let me take a quick break. When I come back, I'll be speaking to the National Association of Artisanal Miners. Well, thank you so much for staying with us. We continue with this conversation, and I'd really like your take on this one on 086-000-959. What do you make of what's happening? And I think the story as it develops, people change their minds about where they were maybe on Monday, how they feel about everything that's happening now. Hopefully giving you, we hope that we can give you a fuller picture of what's actually happening, not just one side of the story. So Zethu Hlatshwayo is a spokesperson of the National Association of Artisanal Miners. Thank you very much again, once again, for making time for us, Mr. Hlatshwayo. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening to you, Mr. Pumelo, and good evening to your listeners at home.
I appreciate you making time to talk to us, because you spoke to us not so long ago, and some of the things that you said to us was to make the point that there is a distinction between you as artisanal miners and what we call Zamazamas. Perhaps maybe clarify that again for us.
Oh, yeah. No, thank you very much for the opportunity. Yeah, I think it goes down to, you know, artisanal miners being the man and the woman who is working for themselves and who's using rudimental tools, the pick and shovel, you know, to dig the minerals that they are so wishing to mine. And then your Zamazama will be a man that is working for a man, working for a man, and everyone does not know uses guns and violence and intimidation, force, labor, enslavement, trafficking. You know, those are the people that we refer to as, you know, your Zamazama.
So, in your own daily operations, let us say mine X is open, has been left, how do you distinguish between the artisanal miners and an operation that you've just explained now, the organized criminal syndicate operation? How do you distinguish the two? How do you know who's who?
Put simply to you, I would say NAM branches are the artisanal miners, because we know them and they know us, and we've been there on the ground. We know the dynamics and we know the process of formalization, which they have started registering themselves. Mm-hmm. We have started engaging with the MRE on their behalf. This is how far they have gone as far as application is concerned. So those are the people that you see are artisanal miners. And for an ordinary person, I would say it's where you can just go and you can, you have, there's no access control of, you know, men who are armed to the teeth. No. You can be able to just go in and buy what you want to buy or do what you want to do. If you are a hawker, you are selling your goods, you do what you do, and they do what they do. So, yeah. But on the Zamazama side, no one has a right to just go in and out, and, you know, because they strict control of who comes in and who must be known. So those are the terrains that distinguish us.
Do you work in the same territory?
No, I think most of the time where we work, it's really, you know, the people that are honest people who want to do this thing, you know, honestly and in an honest way. That is why we also take the initiative of engaging those that are in charge of the mine, whether it's the MRE, if the mine is only derelict and abandoned, or if they still exist, you know, to initiate engagement, to say, we have an interest in what you have left behind, and we can be able to, you know, propose coexistence, you know, between the large-scale mines and the big-scale mining company. That will really eliminate a lot of problems that our country is facing, whether it's illicit market or whether it's the invasion of, you know, formal mines, because people, if they're desperate, they will take chances and they will do, you know, extreme measures. You know, that is why we have the situation we're having in Stilfontein. So these occurrences can be mitigated, you know, easily and swiftly if you can just go back and just do a simple thing, you know, an implementation plan, you know, through formalization, regulation, and legalization of this sector. Mm-hmm. That way, we will be able to create an alternative and a way out, you know, for the men and women who want to honestly put bread on the table. But because we have more than 6,400 of these abandoned, honorless, and derelict mines, you know, in South Africa, there's so many mines that we have not even got there. We don't have even a footprint there. So there's so many mines that there is not really much, you know, control of what is happening there, because, as I am saying, they are abandoned and they are ownerless.
So you had put me in touch with someone who is an artisanal miner exactly in that area, in Stilfontein. Obviously, they didn't want to talk now. They feel a bit unsafe. Who is in that mine as we speak? You know the operations there. Tell us who's underneath. Who is there? Are those artisanal miners, according to you? Are those Zamazamas? Give us a profile of the people who are underground.
To be honest with you, my sister, I would be lying to you, because, you know, in the informal sector, there's two things that are happening. That one, you don't have a logbook, and you don't have your focus meetings or your job card meetings, whereby in the morning, you know, safety and all these you know, regulations and the procedures of the mine are not followed. So you don't have even the list of who's in and who's out. So that is entirely in the operation that people run for themselves. So I cannot speak and say those are our people, because remember, if I would say those are artisanal miners, for a fact, they should be members of NAM, you know, and then NAM should have membership, of NAM. And that would mean that we have recruited them and we have launched them. They are part and parcel of the cooperative that is working under NAM, that is based in the area of the funding, of which those will be our people. But as for now, we are all not sure, don't know of who is there. But our duty and responsibility is to make sure that we restore dignity to artisanal miners who honestly want to work only under regulation, under the legal regime, to put bread on the table and eliminate the scourge of, you know, joblessness, poverty, and inequality. Western countries that are in more situations. So South Africa is a major brink of catastrophe, with this youth and unemployment, and really no plan, you know, to make sure that people have an option, have a way out. I mean, if we have the policy that was started 2 years ago and it's not being implemented, it means we are really not serious about, you know, making sure that our people, you know, are restored dignity too. But they are also given an opportunity to, you know, do it in a sustainable way, a whereby even in the environment is catered for water. And, you know, if I can just elaborate just one more bit, there is a process that is currently being being enrolled by the United Nations Environmental Program, whereby we are talking about the phasing down and the phasing out. I mean, not just talking about, but really implementing a plan, you know, of phasing down and phasing out of the usage of mercury in the artisanal and small scale mining sector. You know, because it's one of the biggest polluters. It is led by the FSE, and this process is about the artisanal and small scale gold mining, you know, formalization. So those are the things that are currently happening, and so, also in the same time, there's training that is being enrolled, whereby our branches, our members are attending. That is done by MQA and MinTech, of which we really are grateful for that, because it's the first time these things are happening. But we need these things, you know, to happen, whereby these artisanal miners can be also catered for, so that they can put in bread on the table, because people are hungry now, you know, and people need a way out now. So I understand the operation, but the operation must be not a priority more than giving people an option and a way out and permits so that they can also participate legally. So
Mr. Tlatshwayo, you've been in touch with government. You're saying that you know, you've been discussing things. What then was your reaction to Operation Valumkoti? Did you go along with this operation? What were your sentiments around that?
Thank you very much, you know, for your beautiful question. I think I would refer you to what was called the the public participation processes that was done by the MRE under Artisanal and Small Scale Mining Directorate, whereby Mpumalanga was also marked to receive what was called a pre-consultation, you know, to the ASM policy, of which one of the submissions that we have made there on the record was that they, according to the plan, according to the policy, the government wanted to implement or to introduce a special task force called Mputu, the minerals, petroleum, particularly it ends with a precious metal unit, Mputu in short. So we said that we don't have a problem with government doing what government wants to do, mm-hmm. you know. But because now we need to have people that are trained and skilled so that they can preserve life of those people that are not inflicting or fighting them as the police when they are doing their work. That means people that are complying. That means they must be given that opportunity. So we said we request a grace period. We request that we be given the pilot project program, you know, pilot project across all provinces, across all minerals, so that those people that are honestly in the process of formalizing, legalizing, and working under the regulation are given an opportunity, you know, to work on the thing in place so that they are safe. But now everyone is covered by the same brush, mm-hmm. and the rest of the government and the forces is upon everyone. So hence, our members are also impacted the same as people that are criminals, because the grace that we have requested was not granted, and it's on record.
Well, did they promise that they were going to give you grace? Did government promise you to give you grace?
I don't remember them promising to say they can do that, but we did raise that and submitted that.
Yeah.
As NAM, say we request this so that we can be able to at least put bread on the table while the process is still ongoing, because people cannot sit down and wait for that day when the permit is on their hand.
Yes.
Because they have a responsibility now, they are hungry tonight, and we need to have something that is practical. I mean, how else are we going to know if the pilots are working or not if we're not implementing them? So there is a classic example of a model that is being used by Mr. Quinton George, one of the CEO of a mine called Bosfeld. You know what he has done? After so much work and revenue being spent on security and fighting artisanal miners and machines being banned and all that is happening, he decided to sit down and give the artisanal miners an opportunity to formalize themselves, to be cooperative, so that they can work together, you know. And now they are working together. So now it is the responsibility of the DMRE to say these are the formulas and the models that must be replicated, must be supported, so that they can be able, you know, to make the difference that is so much needed in all the provinces. Because if it's working for gold, I mean, it can work, mm-hmm. you know, for other minerals. But we have to make sure that the artisanal miners that are on those provinces interested in those minerals, if it's diamond, they are complemented, working together, coexisting with large scale mining companies and institutional support from M2A, from MinTech, you know, from BFSE, and all other stakeholders that can be able, can make South Africa to turn around from this sketch, but use this as an opportunity to create other opportunities and economies and restore life and dignity to the people that are working on the ground.
So in the case of what we're seeing right now, were you, since you are, as you said, you know, you're in communication with government, were you given, you asked for grace period, it looks like you were not given grace period. So were you aware that this operation is happening? Were you prepared for it? In other words, you know, were your members safe? Are your members safe? Do you know if all your members are safe?
No, everyone is not safe. I can tell you for a fact that everyone is running for their life. That's why people are resorting to extreme, you know, going to other mines that are even more dangerous than where they were working, because the operation is there and it's not going anywhere. So it is a challenge for everyone. And the grace that we requested, we never got the grace. So now everyone is just under the same punishment, if I can put it like that. Okay. To say now people must wait, I don't know until when,
sure.
So that they can start working. Because even that process of the ASM policy has come to a grinding halt. We are in talks, we are in we're having regular meetings, with DMRT almost monthly. And unfortunately, we didn't sit last month. I'm hoping before the ending of the year, we will sit. But the problem is, we need to have something that our people can use, that can work on. And now, we cannot wait for some day when the framework and the strategy, implementation strategy, is there.
So do you have a sense? I'm sorry I'm rushing you. I'm just running out of time.
Okay.
Do you have a sense of, and I'm not saying give me exact numbers, but do you have a sense of how many of your members are underneath the ground at Stilfontein right now? Have you gotten any word? Have they asked for help from you to assist?
We do, fortunately, have provincial leaders, mm-hmm. that are in province, that are leading, not just province.
Mm-hmm.
The news that you are getting from them is that the numbers are not as low as they are being said. The possibility is that it's more. Mm-hmm. But as for the accuracy of how much exactly,
sure.
I wouldn't say that we do have that at hand, but it's more than the figure that is being said.
And those who are underground, who are your members, I'm not asking you to speak about others. Why are they not coming out? They've been given an opportunity to come out. Can you explain to us whether this is a choice or whether they... Tell us your sense of why they're not surfacing.
Remember now, I'm not there. I don't know.
Yeah, but you're getting reports. I mean, you're the national... So you're the spokesperson, right? So you're getting reports from your regional leaders. What are the difficulties? They surely are telling you, these are your members, are they not?
Yeah, and I must say that there's many possibilities and scenarios that can come out of this,
mm-hmm.
that can be a possibility and something that is happening.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is that there could be 2 weeks, and unable, to even walk and to even come to safety.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another possibility that they are not willing to come out intentionally,
mm-hmm.
because they want to show or demonstrate that even to come out is not to bring bread on the table, but is still going to put more trouble, more suffering to their families, because there won't be anyone that will be providing. And I was shocked to see how many numbers of people that are South Africans that have also come out, recently there. And it also, in line with the research that we have done with that school of mining, when we did the research in some of the areas in Northwest and also other provinces, whereby we saw that it is not only foreigners that are participating in the sector, but there's men and women that are of South African descent that are honestly wanting to put bread on the table, and they are not working for someone. But because the sector is illegal, because the sector is not formalized, if I can put it like that correctly,
mm-hmm. so
that means everyone is subjected. When whatever mineral you have to sell to whoever that is available to you to sell. So if this sector is formalized, the policy talks about the establishment of your central buying system, whereby people, artisan miners who have some mineral that they have worked and they have got on the field, on the land of their forefathers, they can be able to take it to that process, something like the Kimberley process,
so
which is a tender.
So in a way, I want to then ask you, you are organized, you are trying to formalize your operations, but you are currently operating even before you have your artisanal mining, authorized documentation. Are you then still part of the food chain that is supplying illegal operators? Because you are supplying somebody, are you not?
I must say that ever since the advent of industrial mining, that is when artisanal mining was criminalized, you know. And if you look at our books of history, it will tell you that our people have not been given an opportunity. And this government has a responsibility, you know, to put dignity back to the life of artisanal miners. I mean, I'm talking about our right to life. I mean, Section 11, Section 22 of the Constitution is talking about freedom of choice, trade, association, so and occupation. So if I choose to become an artisanal miner, then I become an illegal. But if you look at the waste sticker, you see them every day. They are also informal sector. Are they illegal? Why are they not being harassed as the way they are harassed? And they are working on landfill sites, on scrap, things that were left behind. And artisanal miners are doing the same thing. But now they are being stigmatized, they are being criminalized, and they are being, you know, painted with the same brush. So that is the unfortunate situation, you know, that we are being criminalized by the system because we are not catered for by the NPRPA. So before the gazette, this policy, the ASM policy was gazetted, people have been working on this sector. Even before 1994, there were men and women who were working for themselves as artisanal mining, as artisanal miners. So this has always existed from back in the days of Ushagun, the great king of Amazu.
So for now, even as you have your plight, you are part of this illegal operation because the people that you're selling to are illegal.
I would say informal activity, because if people are working for themselves, they determine the price of how much they are selling this.
Okay, let me ask you in a different way. Let me ask you in a different way. You don't have a boss with a gun on your head telling you what to do. Who are you then selling? Who are you selling to?
As you are actually saying, at the same time, I cannot speak for myself, but I have to speak for the nation. And there's so many people that are in the sector. I won't be able to give you who they are selling to.
Are you selling to people who are selling to who? So give us the food chain. I'm not saying give us names, but I'm saying in your own words, you're saying you're an artisanal miner. You want to do this the right way. And you've been speaking to government. I'm saying right now, the people that you supply, where are they in the system? Are they mining companies? Who are you selling to? Who are these faceless people?
Yeah. No, I think you are okay. I think I get your question now. Yeah, most of the time, we are selling to someone or some people or businesses that are middlemen. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, the mineral that is being mined by artisanal miner ends up on the same table of the formal mining company.
Correct.
You know, So the buyers, even though they don't come wearing their overalls of the companies that they represent, they will send someone or put someone from the community that they know is strong. They give him their money to buy. So that is how people become middlemen, and then they send it back to the
formal sector.
Your scrapyard dealers also are buying the materials, you know, and there's other formal. I don't want to name, of course. Because I don't know the truthfulness of some of the statements and, you know, allegations that come forward. But, yeah, really, there's many people that are benefiting out of this sector who are not seen because there's many reasons why. But the minerals, they end up on the same market where the legal minerals are being sold. Because there's not one guy I know who buys gold and does something with it. there's not one, but it's exported.
It's all going to the formal sector?
Yes.
All right. Zetuhle Tshwayo, I really appreciate you giving us your time and giving us your perspective. He's a spokesperson of the National Association of Artisanal Miners. When I come back, I speak to the DA. They went to NERSA today. We'll talk to them about that march.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.